Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the blushing capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. It's a balmy minus 5 degrees up here, a little bit of snow on the ground. But that's okay. We're looking forward to talking to today's guest. Today is the president and founder of a cancer organization based right here in the USA, Steve Katz. Steve, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, and thanks for having me on today. And I wish a happy Merry Day to all of your listeners out there.
Thank you very much. We're talking today about your organization, Canine Cancer Research USA. There's a whole bunch of organizations out there, but yours is set apart a little bit different than most. Let's go ahead and talk about what your organization is and what it's all about.
Okay, my organization is a little bit different in the regard that we promote proactivity in the way of cancer prevention as opposed to talking about and raising money for treating cancer. I'm not a medical professional. I did have 3 dogs that passed away from cancer, and it was a very devastating experience. And at the last dog that passed away in 2008, I really wanted to find out why dogs are so prone to cancer. As it is, right now there's about 45% of all dogs that get cancer. If your dog is 6 years old, the dog has a 50% chance of getting cancer. And any dog that's 10 years of age or older, there's about a 60% chance that dog will die from cancer. So it is an epidemic out there.
Right, right.
And it's a very sad thing. It's very hard for people to talk about. It was very difficult for me to discuss a long time ago. But people need to talk about it because the only way to get help is when more people talk about it and medical professionals and holistic professionals get together and put their minds together. And currently, unfortunately, that's really not happening. They work too independently.
You know, Steve, like you said, 60% of dogs over 10 years old most likely die from cancer. I know that when you're dealing with things like this, it's always tough to when you go to the vet and they give you that diagnosis or that prognosis of what's going to happen to your dog. And being in that position once before, I don't know if it was cancer or what they're calling doggy Alzheimer's. It's a difficult proposition to be in when you go to the vet and you hear that news. How did you deal with it? And when you did deal with it, what prompted you to start this organization?
Well, it's a good question. The last dog that we had that died of cancer was in 2008. We, in fact, had 2 dogs that died of cancer in the same year. One was in September of that year, and the first one was in March of that year. When Sandy passed away in March of that year, I frankly became very depressed because it was the second time it happened, and I really didn't know what to do. I was just fit to be tied. I was angry. I was mad, and I went into a state of depression. I got to the point where I sent an email out to all my friends and family that I just wanted to be left alone for a few days and just to grieve with myself, to handle it by myself. And a few days later, I came out of it, and fast forward to September of that year when we got the diagnosis on Star, and Star passed away. My anger and frustration started, but before it got before I became depressed, I really wanted to find out just why it's so prevalent. And I began to do a lot of research and digging and came up with a lot of good answers. And frankly, these are answers I've never heard before from medical professionals, from other dog people. And the answers are not hidden. Obviously, all dogs that get cancer, a lot of them are going to succumb to cancer. Some of them are going to be treated successfully. But there's a lot we can do as dog advocates, as protectors of our animals, to prevent canine cancer. And I'm in no way saying that it is 100% preventable, but there are good demonstrated practices that we can all do to help prevent canine cancer, just as there's a lot of things that people can do to prevent human cancers. The difference is dogs depend on us 100%. So we need to really pay close attention to it, and we can do a lot to help them live a happier, longer life.
Steve Katz is our guest this morning here on DogWorks Radio. We're talking about canine cancer and prevention. You know, Steve, I'm looking at your website. The website is ccrusa.org. There's all kinds of information there about the hows and whys and how to go about seeking out that opinion that is so necessary. Because, like Steve said, your dogs can't tell you, hey, Dad, hey, Mom, I'm sick. It doesn't feel good in such and such an area. You have to do a little bit of digging yourself and figure this out. I know you're not a medical professional, Steve, but you had mentioned that 60% or more of dogs die from cancer if they're over the age of 10. Through your research, have you found out the different types of cancers that dogs get and which are most prevalent? Is it bone cancer? Is it, organ cancer? What are they dying from?
I've listed this on my website, the five most common cancers, and the larger dogs frequently get bone cancer. They get osteosarcoma. The smaller dogs get different types of cancers, oftentimes a skin cancer. But in reality, when you talk about cancer and cancer prevention, each and every cancer starts out exactly the same. That is to say, that what is cancer? Cancer is an abnormal growth of cells. Each and every cancer starts out that way. Where it ends up in the body, well, that determines how the medical people classify the type of cancer that it is. But before we get to the point of getting cancer, my organization and I promote cancer prevention through better demonstrated practices and a lot of things we can do as guardians of our animals to prevent as much cancer as possible. And again, I'm not a medical professional, but hey, if we can prevent 30%, 20%, 40% of dog cancer, we're way ahead of the eight ball. And I know it can be done.
Yes, it can. And just to summarize real quickly, I'm reading off your website here, ccrusa.org. On your Did You Know page, it says on there that Dr. Otto Warburg discovered the root cause of cancer in 1923 and received the Nobel Prize for doing so in 1931. What I found interesting is a quote that you have on there where it says, all normal cells have the absolute requirement for oxygen, but cancer cells can live without oxygen, a rule without exception. So it is a very uphill battle when you're dealing with something that pretty much has a life of its own, and that makes it very difficult to not only, stop beforehand, but also treat after it's there. My next question to you, Steve, before we go into prevention, is through your research, have you found that there is a lot of the same cutting edge treatments that are available for humans are the same that they are for dogs, aren't they?
Absolutely they are. The shame of the matter is here in the United States, the FDA does not approve many of these treatments. They're not recognized treatments. The only treatments that we use currently, 99% of the time, are surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. And when you think about it, radiation therapy, what is radiation? Radiation is a poison, and it contributes to cancer. When you talk about chemotherapy, chemotherapy is a cocktail of any one of 13 or 15 various toxins that can cause cancer. Sure, they'll kill cancer, but maybe that's why the success rate is as low as it is, because
right.
of the treatments that we use.
Exactly, exactly. And like you said, with the chemotherapy, it's literally killing everything in the body and then expecting the body through drugs or other preventative measures or post-preventative measures to build those cells back up and hopefully have healthy cells again. And when you're dealing with something as large as bone cancer, that's a very difficult feat.
Well, you know, with all these toxins in our body from the treatments, it's no wonder that cancer returns as often as it does. We have
right.
no immune system after the treatment.
Exactly,
Our immune system is the only defense that we have. And that's the key
right.
to staying healthy in people and in animals, is a strong immune system.
So let's talk about the preventative measures. I know that's the big focus of your organization, and a lot of folks are interested in this. There's even many of these types of programs for humans. I know that there's a very large cancer treatment center organization here in the U.S. that focuses on that, not only preventing it, but also the holistic side of dealing with cancer. And that's what you guys do at your organization. But before we get into that, Steve, you had mentioned that you had two dogs that passed away from cancer. Can you pinpoint, you know, all of these years later, what was the potential cause for that? Was it diet? Was it where you guys lived? Was it some form of hereditary type thing? Have you pinpointed anything at all on what caused the cancer in your guys' family?
Okay, well, I've identified a couple of things, not just for my dogs, but for all dogs. One of the biggest causes of canine cancer is commercial dog food.
Mm-hmm.
It's made from garbage. It's made from waste products. And I'd like to read something real quick here. What most consumers don't know is that the pet food industry is an extension of the human food and agricultural industry. Pet food provides a convenient way for slaughterhouse offal, grains considered unfit for human consumption, and similar waste products to be turned into profit. This waste includes intestines, udders, heads, hoofs, and possibly diseased and cancerous animal parts. And I just read from What's Really in Pet Food from an organization called BornFreeUSA.org.
Okay, so if we can stay on that point for just a second, when you had mentioned the commercial pet food as being made of some very undesirable materials or ingredients, there probably 90% or more of pet owners today are feeding these types of food to them, the kibbles and the soft foods. What do you give as an alternative?
Well, there are two basic alternatives. Number one is home cooking, and number two is raw food. Home cooking may be intimidating to a lot of people, but it's once you get started, it's not difficult. Of course, if you have multiple dogs, maybe it can be a little bit overwhelming. Feeding commercial kibble is frankly fast and easy. I understand that. They've done a great job of telling us how fast and easy it is, and that's why it's an $18 or $20 billion industry just from the United States. The other alternative would be raw food, and to define raw food, there are three basic types of raw food that I would classify. Number one, you would have your unprocessed raw food, your raw meat, raw chicken bones, and things of that nature. Number two, there is dehydrated raw food, which is kind of like a powder, and you add water. It's very wholesome. It's very good. There are no junk products in it. But again, depending on where the food comes from, who manufactures it, I would encourage everybody to look at the label and read the ingredients, because not every manufacturer is as good as the next manufacturer. The third raw food would be, the product comes in patties. It looks like raw hamburger patties. In fact, that's the product that I buy. I just cut it up in little pieces. My dog gobbles it down. In fact, I supplement it with a little bit of dehydrated raw. And touch wood, we've had Sapphire for a little over 4.5 years or so, and she's been to the veterinarian one time for a health-related issue, which was right after we adopted her. She had an ear infection. And within the research that I've done, I found out that most all ear infections, in fact, are caused by yeast, which is from commercial dog food.
Right. You know, Steve, the argument to that is when you are feeding raw food that the dogs are not getting a complete diet. They're, whether you're feeding meat or some other main source of protein or whatever, often you'll hear folks talk about it's not a complete food for dogs. They need other things such as vegetables and fruit and leafy greens and all this other stuff. What is your stance on that?
Okay, well, to answer your question, the raw food that I feed that looks like a hamburger patty, in fact, it's made up of 80% meat, 10% bone for calcium, and 10% vegetable. So it is a complete meal.
Right. What about cost? I know not only is convenience important for the commercial dog foods, and that's what they talk about in their marketing, but also the cost. For example, Steve, we have 30 dogs out in our sled dog kennel, and every day we're feeding about 30 pounds of raw meat and then other additives, including a commercial kibble. But we're feeding about 50 pounds a day of food, which equals about $1,000 a month food budget for our sled dogs. What about the cost for food, even if you have two or three or four dogs in your house that a lot of people do, in regards from commercial kibble or soft food comparison to the raw diet that you're talking about?
Well, I would draw an analogy. If you and I went to McDonald's for dinner, and the next night we went to a nice restaurant and had a nice meal of good, wholesome food, there's a wide difference in the cost between the McDonald's and the restaurant food that we went to. And there's a fair amount of difference between a good, healthy, wholesome raw diet and commercial kibble.
Right.
Although there is some commercial kibble that's a lot cheaper than other commercial kibble. So if commercial kibble basically is divided into three categories. You have your supermarket kibble, you have your big box store kibble, and then you have your specialty kibbles that are sold in specialty stores that are the super premium brands. If someone's feeding a super premium brand currently, they're not far away from the cost of a raw diet.
Right, and that's a great point. We feed one of the premium kibbles up here during the racing season. It costs about $46 a bag, which is almost double the price of a supermarket bag of, 40-pound bag of kibble when you think about it. But not only do you feed a lot less, but it is still a commercial kibble, but it's a lot better in terms of ingredients. Not a lot of byproducts, not a lot of that quote-unquote garbage, as you mentioned, in a lot of those commercial kibbles.
Well, typically the cheaper the dog food, the cheaper the product that's in the bag, let's face it.
Right. And you made a great analogy making the comparison between McDonald's and that fine steakhouse there in the city. So let's talk a little bit more about how that diet is related to cancer. What is your theory on that?
Okay. Give me just a minute. I have some information here I wanted to reference as far as avoiding and protection.
Okay. Steve Katz is our guest today on DogWorks Radio. Check out his website, ccrusa.org. He runs an organization. He is the founder and president of Canine Cancer Research USA. It is a 501c3, and it is available on the web at that website. You guys can check that out. Steve, do you have that source there?
Yes, thank you. I'm going to do a little bit of reading from my presentation that I developed entitled Canine Nutrition and Disease Prevention, a Holistic Approach. And
okay.
To answer your question, while there are no guarantees against cancer or any other disease, we look at what is known and we adjust accordingly. The primary reasons canine cancer occurs are diet and nutrition related, excessive vaccines, and topical flea and tick treatments that are loaded with chemicals, environmental toxins, and, of course, genetics. A healthy body should be able to destroy a lot of free radicals. However, when our bodies become overloaded, that's oftentimes the development of cancer. And while we're on the subject of cancer, let me just mention it may upset some people to know that all of our bodies have cancer cells in them, all of our humans, all of our animals. And the world we live in is just loaded with toxins, let's face it. And this is where the cancer comes from, the toxins. The diet, nutrition, and genetics have a common thread. We are what we eat. Various commercial dog food ingredients are linked to cancer. Many genetic issues can be reversed via a healthy food and nutrition. We want to eliminate what is not natural, what nature knows best, and what nature intended for us to eat is what we should be eating. A lot of the processed food that's out there for people and for animals is just not healthy. It does not promote health. It promotes the bottom dollar for the manufacturer and for the shareholders, but it does not promote health. As far as vaccines, replace yearly vaccines with blood titers, which is a blood test to determine if your pet needs a vaccine. People, in fact, get blood tests, so why not blood tests for our four-legged family members? As far as dog food and dog food manufacturers, This is a bit of a strong statement, but I have in my presentation that dog food manufacturers basically live by two rules. And I don't mean any offense to anybody, especially manufacturers. Rule number one is they need to make a profit. Rule number two is they want to increase market share. Most dog food out there is not created with your pet's health in mind. As primary caregivers, we need to take a proactive role in selecting food that provides our pets with the best opportunity of a long, healthy, and happy lifetime. Being our pet's champion, reading food labels because they depend on us to make informed, better decisions. Things that we want to look for to avoid on dog food labels: we want to at all costs avoid byproducts. They've been linked to cancer. We want to avoid ethoxyquin, BHA, and BHT. These are preservatives that are linked to cancer. And we also want to avoid generic meals. What is a generic meal? Generic meals are meat meal, bone meal, poultry meal. They're linked to cancer. They're non-specific meals. And I'll get to specific meals in just a minute. Corn or wheat. We need to stay away from those things that are in dog food. Also, dogs are carnivores, meaning they are meat eaters, and they don't process grains. And as far as grains are concerned, the grains that are grown in the ground today are vastly different than the grains that were grown in the ground 30, 40 years ago. Things like insecticides have just killed the soils. Why do manufacturers use grains? They're cheaper fillers. Things we want to look for on the label for giving our pets the best chances, the best opportunities of longer, healthier life. Dogs thrive on meat, chicken, turkey, and lamb. Better dog foods, in fact, commercial dog foods, that is, have multiple meat products. The first 4 to 6 ingredients listed on the label are the most important because they are overwhelmingly the majority of what's in the bag. Specific meals, such as turkey, chicken, and lamb meal, are proteins, less moisture, and are very healthy ingredients for your pet.
You know, Steve, if I could, I just want to backtrack so we don't lose our listeners in regards to your presentation, and I want to get back to what's in the label. That's something I want to concentrate on. Steve Katz is our guest this morning on Dog Works Radio. Steve, you talked about vaccines, and that's a very important subject that you brought up, and I definitely want to hit on that because you as well as I know that most municipalities throughout the United States, and we have listeners from all over the world, so it may be different in Europe or South America or Africa or wherever folks are listening. But here in the United States, it's almost a requirement as you own a dog that you have to have these vaccines in order, number one, to be licensed, number two, to take these pets to places, whether it be traveling on an airplane back and forth or, different places, whether it be a boarding facility, et cetera. They require these vaccines. And you brought up the blood tests, which are becoming more common. But that is a true uphill battle when you're talking about dealing with the bureaucracies of a government, when you're talking about saying, hey, I refuse to give my dogs vaccines, and you're just going to have to deal with it. That's a tough hoe to haul, isn't it, Steve?
Yes, it is, but an informed dog owner is a better dog owner.
Exactly.
And to talk a little bit about vaccines, last year, for the very first time, the veterinary teaching hospital at the University of Purdue, a very credible institution, has linked excessive vaccines with canine cancer. It is widely accepted in, I believe, 27 veterinary teaching institutions in the United States that there is something out there called vaccinosis. And vaccinosis is an adverse reaction to a vaccine. And a lot of these institutions are also now promoting blood tests as opposed to automatically vaccinating our animals.
Right.
I think that the typical veterinarian may be a little bit reluctant to accept this, but as we go on in time, I think the word will get to the typical local veterinarians, and they will begin to do a lot more titer testing. And I would encourage all dog owners to ask for a titer before they get their dogs vaccinated.
So, Steve, if I may jump in here, how would you suggest that the typical pet owner approach this, not only through their local municipality, their local government, and requiring a rabies vaccine for a license or for the ownership of a dog? How would you tell these folks to go about fighting this and saying, hey, you know what, I'm against this, we're not going to do it? What would you say to these folks?
Well, the one area that all dog owners are responsible for is a rabies vaccine. Every other vaccine is completely voluntary. I don't know of any laws that require a parvo vaccine. I don't know of any laws that require a vaccine for any other reason, a Lyme vaccine. These are all voluntary vaccines.
Right.
And the only one that is mandatory, as I said, is rabies. And to be on the safe side, there are rabies vaccines that are mercury-free. And mercury is the worst culprit of all vaccines. We know mercury causes cancer.
Right, right.
So we want to stay away from any vaccine with mercury.
So, Steve, just to figure out your stance on this, because it's a very hotbed topic, especially here, excuse me, in the sled dog world, because we're required, excuse me, to have rabies shots and that sort of thing in order to participate in races. And, you know, there's both sides of the issue. What about the argument if a municipality or organization says, okay, Steve, you don't want to give vaccines to your dogs, but do you vaccinate your kids? Do you get flu shots yourself? Do you do preventative measures in terms of human holistic or human preventative care through vaccines and other types of medications, or is it just for your dogs?
I do not advocate vaccines, period.
For human and or dogs?
That's correct.
Okay.
And the reason, let me explain the reason why I say that. And I'm sure there are people that have their own opinions. What is a vaccine? A vaccine is not a guarantee that you won't get sick. A vaccine is a group of chemicals in a needle designed to stimulate your immune system.
Right.
Your immune system, and when I say you are, I'm referring to animals and people, is the only defense mechanism to protect us from disease and sickness. If we have a strong immune system, we won't get sick. Obviously, everybody and every dog may get a little sniffle, get sick every once in a while. And there are things to do to strengthen the immune systems that are natural, that are not vaccine-induced. There are too many adverse reactions from vaccines for me as an individual to promote vaccination. Obviously, there are a lot of elderly people who are not well that may want to think about getting vaccines, but be cautious because the vaccines can also cause adverse reactions in older people and young people as they can in animals. And undesired results can and do happen.
Exactly right. And that's the lead into my next point there, Steve, is you talked about there are ways to build up that immune system. And one of the main ways, not only for humans, but also with dogs, is through diet, through that quality diet. A person can be totally healthy in terms of, you know, a clean bill of health through their doctor, but if they're eating garbage 24/7, eating McDonald's every meal, that's going to come back and bite them at a later date, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We are what we eat. That's what I said earlier. And if we eat well, if we live well, if we have the right vitamins and minerals and nutrients from the food, we're going to live a longer, healthier life. And again, that may not be true for each and every person because there are a lot of variables in the environment. But looking at the big picture, that will be what happens.
And that's a great point. And that's what I was trying to tie together, the difference between that healthy lifestyle that you're promoting and hopefully curbing the causes and or effects of cancer, but also ways to prevent it. And I assume, just in talking to you, that a major preventative measure that you're advocating is that diet. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I strongly promote the raw food diets and the homemade diets. And the one thing that I want to point out with homemade diets that many people leave out of a homemade diet is the calcium level. The calcium is very important for strong, healthy bones.
That's totally correct.
People sometimes think giving a dog a piece of raw meat, that's the way to go, and that's their diet. Well, you're leaving out the calcium. And
right.
Calcium is very important.
And it is. And if you hearken back to the way that dogs were developed through the wild canines, whether it be wolves or whomever, they didn't just eat the meat off of the kill. They ate everything, didn't they?
They absolutely did. They ate the bones. They ate the contents of the stomach, which were oftentimes plant-related.
The organs so and everything, right?
Absolutely.
So again, we're talking to Steve Katz today. He's the founder and president of Canine Cancer Research USA. Check out his website at ccrusa.org. Steve, what is your next point? I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
I wanted to mention some things about building the immune systems. And these are not just for animals, but for people too. If we don't have a strong immune system, that leaves the window open for disease and sickness. If we eat a good diet, that's going to promote health and longevity. But in order to continually build the immune system, and I stress that because we live in a toxic environment. There's toxins all over the place. We have acid rain. We have pollutants from industrial plants. We have we're eating plants and vegetables that are grown in soil that's loaded with insecticides. And as bleak of a picture as this is, it's the truth. So some of the things I wanted to talk about keeping the immune system strong and healthy are some of the vitamins that I strongly promote on a daily basis for people and animals. And one of these things that I strongly promote is something called Active Hexose Corelated Compound. It's AHCC for short. It can be purchased at basically any health food store. You can buy it online. There's no prescription needed. There are no drugs in it. Bless you.
Thank you.
Sure. What it basically is Chinese mushroom extract and essential amino acids. It's extremely healthy for the body. Another product that everybody and every animal is completely basically void with is vitamin D3. We've been told for years and years and years to stay out of the sun. We want to avoid sun poisoning. The sun is not really good for you because it causes sunburn. Well, guess what? The sun is nature, and it's very healthy for you. And we all lack vitamin D3 because we don't get out in the sun enough. We don't spend enough time outdoors. Obviously, you spend a lot of time outdoors.
And we do up here, but it's often dark up here in the winter, so a lot of our time spent outside is in the dark.
Vitamin C is very healthy for people as well as for animals. And one of the best forms of vitamin C is something called liposomal vitamin C. Liposomal vitamin C is almost as potent as intravenous vitamin C. And why am I mentioning intravenous vitamin C? I mention it because there are veterinarians that treat dogs with cancer with intravenous vitamin C therapy as opposed to chemotherapy and radiation and surgery. And the success rates are at least as good, if not better. Now, when we talk about treating cancer with these products, everything is dependent upon how advanced the cancer is. Are we treating stage 1 cancer or stage 4 cancer? See, there's a big difference between stage 1 and stage 4. Oftentimes when we find it in our pets, it's pretty well advanced. To get back to a couple of other things as far as keeping the immune systems healthy, something out there called wheatgrass, which is basically, it's found in the rivers, rivers and oceans. It grows wild. It's fermented wheat germ extract, extremely healthy. You buy it, it's in a pill form, or you can buy it in a powder form. And all these things, the vitamin C, the wheat germ extract, the AHCC, they've all been studied. I don't know that anybody in the United States has any great deal of knowledge on these products in relation to cancer, but there are studies have been done on all of them and their cancer-killing properties.
You know, Steve, you spoke about the vitamin C, and that goes back to the old wives' tale that you hear about when you're a kid, about your mom tells you when you're sick, whether you're staying home from school with the flu or whatever, make sure you drink your orange juice. And that goes back to that how important that vitamin C is. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. However, most of the vitamin C in the orange juice is probably outweighed by all the other unnatural things that are in the orange juice. I would much prefer people utilize an all-natural vitamin and mineral. And to go a little further with this, there are so many people out there making vitamins and promoting vitamins. You want to make sure that your vitamin is an all-natural vitamin. It's not something that is purchased at the grocery store where the ingredients were imported from a foreign country. It needs to be 100% pure product.
So let's talk, if we can, Steve, about these products and where they're able to be purchased. Of course, nowadays there's a health food store on every corner. There's even grocery stores that promote that lifestyle. Entire grocery stores that are focused on organic and healthy type products. What about cost? Cost with pets is always a very hotbed subject because unlike with us, unless we're in a position where we cannot provide for ourselves at all, cost is not as much of an issue for humans as it is for our pets. What do you tell your community when it comes to that very important question? How much is all this going to cost? And then, of course, a lot of decisions are based on that, aren't they?
Absolutely, they are. As far as costs are concerned, costs are relative. How healthy do you want to keep your pet? How healthy do you want to keep yourself?
Right.
You can spend $20 a month, $40, $50, $60 a month. I don't want to make it sound as if it's cost prohibitive, but what is your health worth? How much is someone paying now to go visit their veterinarian every second month or every third or fourth month? You can avoid these vet visits with healthy animals.
Exactly. And you had mentioned that you've taken your dog to the vet one time, and I believe you said 4.5 years, and that was for an
yes.
ear infection.
Yes.
Since you became a researcher of this and, of course, started your organization that is based on this, if you could, Steve, tell us about the cost for your day-to-day activities with your dog or dogs. How much are you spending a day for your diet and for these supplements, the vitamin C and vitamin D3 and the wheatgrass germ and all that stuff? What is a daily cost or a monthly cost for a program like yours?
Monthly cost for my dog is about $150.
And that's not bad. Even if you're feeding the super premium kibbles and you have a dog or two, that's about the same cost, isn't it?
I don't think there's much of a difference if there is a difference, because
right.
I've seen kibble out there that's $60, $70, a 28-pound bag.
And you're feeding a couple of those a month to a good sized dog. It equals about the same cost as what you're doing. What about time? You had mentioned that commercial products are designed for speed, designed for quickness. How much time are you spending per day on providing for your dog or dogs in terms of the supplements and the preparation of the meals, et cetera?
Well, as I said, the dog food I feed is a raw dog food that I store in the freezer, and I take out a two-day supply, put it in the refrigerator, and I just cut it up in 6 or 8 pieces in her bowl. I put her vitamins and minerals in there, and to prepare her food, it takes about 3 or 4 minutes every morning and every night. So I don't really consider that to be time wasted. It's time well spent.
I totally agree with you, and like you said, it is not only the time and the expense that's a big factor in a lot of folks' way that they deal with their dogs, but also that quality of time. How much how much time are you putting into it that is good for your dog? Are you just feeding the dog, you know, a bowl of kibble, you know, scooting it across the floor? Or are you taking the time to research this and taking the time to prepare a diet that is going to prolong that relationship versus inhibit that relationship that is so important with our dogs? Do you agree with that?
100%, Robert. When I lost my dogs, if it wasn't for cancer, they may have lived another 3, 4, or 5 years. I was robbed of time with my dogs because of cancer. And I pledged to myself that I was going to find out what cancer was all about in dogs and do everything within my power to prevent it from happening. And if it happened again, it was not going to be because I didn't do everything.
That's a great point.
I kind of felt partly responsible for my dogs getting cancer because of what I did not know then.
Right, exactly. Steve, we have about 13 minutes or so to go, and I definitely want to hit on one final segment in relation to your organization and what you guys do. And that is oftentimes, since our dogs are not able to communicate with us in one way or another, oftentimes we take our dogs to the vet and, you know, the dog has fallen ill from whatever reason. And we take our dogs to the vet and they do their tests, their blood test and, you know, all of that stuff. And they come back and they say, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, your dog has cancer and it's at an advanced stage. And this is what we need to do to treat it, whatever alternatives there are. What do you tell these folks that are in those later stages of cancer? You had mentioned a few minutes ago about that between stage 1 and stage 4 and the differences of those. How do you educate your community about that? You know, they take the dog to the vet and they find out that, you know, they're against the 8-ball there. They're behind that 8-ball and it may be too late. What do you tell these folks and the best way to proceed?
Well, frankly, it's a very personal decision with that particular pet owner. If it's stage 1 cancer, even stage 2, they may want to pursue certain holistic treatments with, of course, their vet's permission and knowledge. If they don't, it's strictly up to them. If it's stage 3, stage 4, I frankly, the picture is not a good picture.
And it can advance relatively quickly. They can go from stage 1 to stage 4 relatively quickly. And I'm sure everybody knows that's listening to this show, a dog's life cycle is advanced much faster than ours.
Mm-hmm.
So, with us, it may take a year or two for us to go from 1 to 4, as you're talking about your stages. But with dogs, it can happen in a matter of weeks or a matter of months because it's so advanced and so quick to propagate, I guess is a proper word.
It happens very quickly. Very quickly,
right,
with animals because, as you say, they age much faster than we do.
So what do you tell these folks, Steve? They're looking for advice. They come across your website, and they haven't done any of those preventative measures. They fed the kibbles, and they've gave the vaccines, and, you know, they've had their dogs in these environments that you had mentioned. And they're calling up your organization or emailing you or whatever, and they're saying, Steve, what do you guys suggest? I was just told today that my dog has, you know, 6 months to live or whatever that they may speak to you. What do you tell these folks? How do you help them through the process?
Well, the first thing I would suggest to them is to change the dog's diet because there's always hope. Being realistic is one thing, but every pet owner always holds out a last breath of hope. And
Right. What
gave the dog cancer to start with, again, in my unprofessional opinion, was a lot of the dog food, the commercial dog food. So we want to get the ill dog, on a very healthy, wholesome dog food. And that would be home-cooked. And in some cases, a lot of people stay away from raw dog food when a dog is ill because of the pathogens on raw dog food. When a dog is ill, the immune system is very weak, And a lot of people are afraid that the pathogens in raw dog food can make things worse. So the best diet for a dog with cancer I recommend is a 100% nutritionally complete home-cooked diet. And these are diets that people can make at home, and they can also be purchased. There are companies out there that manufacture these type of diets, and they manufacture cancer-specific diets for dogs with cancer that people can source.
Right. You know, and most of this stuff, Steve, is relatively new on the market, especially these already prepared meals, as you're mentioning, the tubes of meat that you feed, where you cut it up into slices or bites and feed it to your dogs. It's been a relatively new process. You know, I've been around dogs for a long time. I've been a musher for almost 20 years, and we've always fed our dogs raw meat. Like I said, about 30 pounds a day of just raw meat is going into our dog's diet every day, and our huskies are some of the most healthy dogs in the canine world. They just don't get sick like a lot of the other dogs in today's society, and I think a lot of that does come to diet and exercise and lifestyle and that sort of thing. But Steve, excuse me, my last question, I'm battling a little bit of cold here, so I'm trying to hold it back as much as I can here. Steve, what is your stance on the veterinary community, where you take your dog to the vet and, you know, you've dealt with the same vet for throughout the dog's life, and they say, okay, well, we need to treat this aggressively through chemotherapy or radiation. And, you know, like with our human doctors, you know, we've built up a relationship with these folks, and it's often difficult to just say, you know what, I don't agree with that, I'm going to go with somebody else. How do you explain that to the folks that are calling you up, where they've dealt with, you know, Dr. Smith for, you know, the entire dog's life, and now they're being forced into a position where they, number one, they don't know about alternative treatments, and number two, they aren't educated enough about these other treatments. How do you steer these guys the correct way?
It's a very thin line, because I do not want to get involved in any type of conflict between a person and their trusted veterinarian.
Right.
If that person wants to know about holistic methods, if that person wants to know about a holistic veterinarian in their area, then I can pursue a conversation with them. However, any advice that I would suggest, and it's strictly advice, it's not treatment, I would encourage them 100% to review this with their treating professionals.
Right. And there, like you said, there's always that last bit of hope. No matter how dire the circumstance, there's always that last bit of hope. You never know what could happen.
Definitely. Miracles happen sometimes, and you never know. Once you start introducing wholesome foods to the diet and adding oxidants to increase the oxygen levels within the body, like vitamin C, like AHCC, like wheatgrass, and the Chinese mushrooms, you never know.
Exactly. You know, it could be that one piece of the puzzle that allows your dog to turn the corner for that treatment that becomes successful. Steve, we have just a minute or two left. I definitely want you to tell folks how they can get in touch with you. I know your website is your main link, but you're also on and Facebook and other types of media. How else can folks find out about your organization?
Well, obviously, the best way to find out about us is go to the web. It's ccrusa.org. There's a contact link there. People can contact me anytime through that contact link. I'll also be glad to give my email address. People can use my email address to contact me. It is CCR for Canine Cancer Research, CCRUSA1@Verizon.net. I may not answer you the same day. I may not answer you the second day, depending upon how flooded my inbox is, but I will get you an answer. The other thing I wanted to mention, of course, is Facebook. We have a very active Facebook page. Our canine cancer page is actively promotes things to do for the health and welfare of your dog. And I just want to conclude with one other thing that you were talking about with your dogs being outside all the time as a musher. I think that exercise for any dog, I don't care if it's a 60-pound dog or if it's a 10-pound dog, is extremely important to promote good health. Dogs that live inside and don't get outside and don't get exercised are stressed animals, and stress helps produce a lot of bad results in people and with animals.
Totally agree with that, Steve. You know, they talk about, you know, the sedentary lifestyle that so many of us Americans are living today, and they wonder why, you know, we have the highest healthcare costs almost in the world, and a lot of that comes through that lifestyle. Steve, we're just about out of time. I know we covered a lot of stuff today, but again, I want to make sure that we pass that information along to you. We'll make sure that we have all the links on our show pages once that becomes available sometime later today. I'll make sure I pass over some links. Steve, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on a Sunday.
Robert, thank you. And Michelle, have a great day, and I hope your dogs live a long, healthy lifetime. And the same to you, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Steve Katz, the founder and president of Canine Cancer Research USA, a 501c3 here in the United States. Steve, we'll talk again soon. See you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.